are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, building a support system for someone with an eating disorder is emotionally demanding and often confusing. And so today we break down how friends, partners, parents, and siblings can offer genuine help without crossing boundaries. We also cover self-care for caregivers and the importance of education and empathy in being part of someone's healing journey. Yolanda Lindeke from the Vista Clinic joins us once again to speak today about supporting loved ones with eating disorders. Yolanda, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Good morning, Bongi. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yes, always a pleasure to have you. We're speaking about supporting our loved ones who might have eating disorders. What are some helpful and unhelpful things to say to someone struggling with an eating disorder? I'd assume just have a sandwich is probably not going to be helpful.
Definitely. That is probably one of the things you shouldn't say. So helpful things are grounded in empathy, curiosity, and non-judgment. So if you're speaking from a place where those things ring true, then you tend to be on the safe side. Okay. So phrases like, I'm here for you, I care about you, or how can I support you right now, help the person feel seen without any pressure. We want to avoid focusing on food or weight or their appearance. Okay. So anything saying like, oh, you know, you look very thin, you look like you've lost some weight, maybe you should just have a sandwich. These are things that we should avoid. Even a compliment like you look healthy can very often be misinterpreted. Okay. Then unhelpful things normally include unsolicited advice. So just eat more, or, you know, my friend has followed this diet, or, you know, I struggle with picking up weight and the carnivore diet worked really well for me, or, you know, I have this great nutritionist that will help you, or my grandmother always said drinking this or eating that can be very helpful. Mm. That would be negative things to say, because right. It's kind of focusing on the weight, focusing on the eating. And it's minimizing their struggle by saying, oh, it's just a phase, you'll get over it. Or even making comparisons can sometimes also be very unhelpful. Okay. Instead, center your conversation around their feelings, their well-being, and not their body. So how's it going? How are you? How can I support you? What can I help you with? And I'm always very supportive of language in terms of being aware of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So if the person looks, let's say they're dressing up or they're wearing makeup, I tend to not want to say, oh, you look beautiful, you look good, or you look healthy. I would lean more towards, oh, you look fancy. Oh, you look so dressed up. And that's my advice, not just for eating disorders, but in general. Okay. Keep words like you look beautiful to when someone is in their natural state, when someone's not wearing makeup, when they're just wearing their everyday clothes. Because we tend to want to give those compliments when someone's wearing a fancy dress or makeup, is, oh, you look beautiful. And subconsciously, we're not always aware that we're highlighting those messages that you only look beautiful when you're dressed up. You only look beautiful when you're skinny. You only look beautiful when you have makeup on.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Never thought about that. Mm. And how can you maintain a healthy relationship while supporting someone in recovery?
Okay, so healthy boundaries are key. Support doesn't mean taking on the role of the therapist. And right. I think we've spoken about this quite a few times.
Yeah.
It's not you doing it for the person or constantly monitoring their behavior. You're not the police. You're not the person that has to now check, are they eating, when they're eating, how much they're eating. That can create tension, mistrust, and it can really make the relationship feel like non-trusting and not a good relationship. So rather keep communication open and honest and make time for activities unrelated to food or their recovery, because this takes pressure off of the relationship and ensure that the relationship is growing in other areas. We are more than just that thing. Like, for example, if your children are going through something, you are more than just the mother of a child that is experiencing this. You're a mother of that child. There's other elements of that child. There's other elements that you can focus on, highlight. So that would be a great way to kind of support that. It's not solely just, oh, this is what's the problem and we need to focus on that, because the relationship is going to start revolving around the problem and no longer the person in the relationship.
Yeah.
Then encourage professional help and celebrate some wins. Like if they're having a good day, or they're really making strides. They're telling you, my emotions are feeling better today. We celebrate that. But also maintain your own interest and social connections so that we minimize carer burnout, that you're now not so much giving to the people in your life that you start to struggle.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose that's something that is probably quite common, especially, I'd assume, especially in the case of a parent and a child, that the parent then becomes, if not careful, can become all consumed by this. And then it almost turns the child into a project that needs to be fixed or something like that, rather than a whole person with other aspects to them outside of the eating disorder.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head. Exactly that. And then that kind of consumes not just the parent-child relationship, but the entire family, because that's all that we're talking about. That consumes us at the end of the day. And that can sometimes really hinder and restrict recovery.
Sure. And what role does patience play when progress feels slow or inconsistent? We all have expectations. We're thinking, I mean, we've been doing this. We've been going to therapy. What's taking so long? How can we manage our expectations and also maintain that patience?
Blanca, I think we live in a society with immediate gratification. You know, these days I can get on my phone, I can get on an app and I can order, and in 20 minutes there's a pizza at my house or there's my groceries that's being delivered.
Yeah.
And I think that these things also translates into our emotions. But that's not how God created us. We are not an app that can just be ordered. Things take time. Grief takes time. Healing takes time. And recovery is, in anything, is rarely a straight line.
Yeah.
It's often two steps forward, one step back. So patience allows you to stay present through setbacks without frustration taking over.
Mm.
So when you understand that recovery is going to be this to and fro, this ups and downs, then you don't get discouraged when we're in the downs. You don't get discouraged when we're in the valleys, because you know the peaks are going to come as well.
Yeah.
So for someone in recovery, feeling rushed or pressured can trigger shame or withdrawal. And that's what, if we become impatient, can kind of relay. So patience communicates trust. So saying things like, I believe in your ability to heal in your own time. It's a long-term commitment. It's not a quick fix. And patience protects that relationship from burnout.
Mm.
So that's why be more invested.
Yolanda, are you still there?
Invested in the patience than just being invested in. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. We cut off for a few seconds.
Oh, sorry.
Got you back now. Yeah.
Oh, great. So it's more just being focused on the relationship and consistency and patience there than being focused on results.
And I think understanding that process, as you're saying, understanding that there are ups and downs, two steps forward, one step back. For some people, and I'm probably one of those kinds of people, where whenever you see that step back, it's very easy for some of us, for anyone like me, to just give up and just be like, yeah, I messed it up already, so might as well go all the way out and then I'll start again tomorrow. I'll try again next week or next month or whatever it is. Any kind of anything that doesn't feel like a straight line forward feels like a failure rather than, you know, a speed bump. It just feels more like a failure. And I guess if you are the one with the eating disorder and you see it in your family's face or in the people who are supposed to be supporting you, you know, feeling that dejected and disappointed in you, that adds more pressure. And you're already feeling like a failure yourself. And then now you see your family is confirming that for you, that, you have failed.
Bongi, I want to ask you a question. Have you ever spilled milk before?
Yeah. I feel like I know what you're about to say.
So I want you to think about this. Let's say you spilled a little bit of milk. You opened the milk carton and you spilled a little bit of milk.
Yeah.
Do you now go, oh, I spilled a little bit. Let me just empty out the whole 2 liters on the floor.
Have you ever done that? I hear you.
And I think very often when we have that viewpoint of saying like, oh, I miss, I might as well give up. That's the equivalent of, I missed a little bit of milk. Let me just throw out the whole carton.
Yeah.
And no, you just go, it's not the end of the world. I spilled a little bit. I clean that up and I go on with the rest of my day.
Right.
We are humans. We make mistakes.
Oh,
we shouldn't focus on, oh, now it's just the end of that. But it's human. It's our human nature. And I think if we accept that We are human. It's a difficult process, but we reach out with love and support. Yeah. We can go forward in love and trust, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And then why is it important for supporters to also get help for themselves? I mean, they're not the ones struggling with the eating disorder. Why do they need help and support for themselves?
Supporting someone with an eating disorder can be very emotionally exhausting and at times become completely overwhelming. We said earlier, those relationships might even consume the whole family, consume everyday routines. So to make sure that you don't get overwhelmed by that, if you neglect your own well-being, you risk burnout. You start to maybe resent that person in your life, resent that friendship, or unintentionally become enabling and harming behaviors because you're so burnt out that now it's just easier to give into this enabling behavior and that's harmful than supporting. So getting help, whether through therapy, support groups, or trusted friends, provides spaces to process your own feelings, to learn healthy boundaries, and to maintain your own mental health. So in short, you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't be that person's only support system, only guide, because you are going to put yourself, that person, and the relationship up for failure. And that's what we want to prevent.
Is there a risk, though? Because I think sometimes someone might be afraid that, you know, if I put up some boundary or if I'm trying to do something for myself and my loved one needs me in that moment and I'm not there, would that not be putting them at a risk of relapse or something like that? Is that not the reason why we just feel like, no, we have to be there for our loved one at all times?
I think that is the reason. But the thinking in that sentiment is these two extremes, because you're saying, I'm either there for the person or I'm setting a boundary. And that's just a dichotomy that's not true.
Okay.
It's not once I set a boundary, I'm no longer there for that person. The boundary just means in what way am I there for you?
Okay.
In what context do I show up for you? What are the structures around me showing up for you? And I think that's something you should be careful for, to think that it's either one thing or the other. I can set a boundary and still be there for you. I can take care of myself and still take care of you. Both of those things can be true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not I either set a boundary or I'm there for my loved one. I can do both.
I like that. Kind of makes me think of, you know, some conversations I've heard about motherhood and what's better, to be a stay-at-home mother or a working mother, and the challenges of being either one. And I remember someone saying in one of the conversations that it's like when you are a working mother, you can no longer be there for your children. You can't enjoy a beautiful relationship with your kids because you're busy trying to build your career. It might not be the same as the mother whose entire, it's not even her entire life, but who has more time, let me say, with her children. It might not be the same, but you can still put more quality into the time, into the limited time that you might have with your child. So it's not about because I'm at work, that means I don't care about my children, or because I'm chasing my career, I'm no longer a good mother. But it might not be the same as the next mother, but it doesn't necessarily mean by focusing on this one thing, I can no longer focus on anything else.
Exactly. And it's that thing, just because one thing rings true, it doesn't mean the other thing is false,
right?
By definition.
Exactly.
And I think we have to keep that in mind. Just because I am supporting you and setting a boundary doesn't mean that I'm going to fail or be bad in either one.
Right.
Same with the mom. A working mom can be a good working mom and still show up for kids.
Yeah.
It might look different.
Yes.
And that's where the conversation should be around. Not what is right and wrong,
exactly,
but how does it look different?
Beautiful. All right. Now, how can you tell when your support is making a positive impact?
Well, I think our support is a positive impact. That's why it's called support, right? But you might notice small but meaningful changes.
Mm-hmm.
They may open up more. So that's one thing. You know, when there's good trust, there is good communication, you're going to see that they're going to share more with you. They're going to be more open with you. And you now highlighted the being a mom. And when I ask those questions to moms, I, like, you know, they say, my kid has the best manners when they're somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They are the sweetest, nicest, most best behaved kids when they're with other people, but when they're with me, they're an absolute menace. They are horrible.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, and I tell mothers and reassure them, and I say, do you know why that is? And it's like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, because you are their safe space. They feel like they don't have to put on the mask. Mm-hmm. They don't have to pretend when they're with you. When they're with other people, they have to show up as society wants and needs them to.
Yeah.
But with you, they show up their authentic self. Aww. So yes, you might be the one seeing the tantrums. You might be the one seeing the raw emotions. But that's because they feel safe with you. They feel they can open up with you. So you're going to see that more. You're going to see them engaging more socially. They're going to express gratitude or show less secrecy around food.
Mm-hmm.
They will be maybe more vulnerable with their food. Sometimes progress isn't visible in that moment, but if your relationship feels more trusting and less strained, that's a strong indicator that your support is helping. And remember, your role isn't to fix them, but to walk alongside them. Often your presence and consistency is the biggest gift that you can offer. You are offering a safe space. You're not being a therapist. You're not being the fixer. You are being the safe space. And that holds more water than anything else.
I love that, because I think sometimes we feel so overwhelmed because maybe we don't know necessarily the language and we don't know, you know, what is the right thing to say in a particular situation. And sometimes because of that fear, we can shut down. And in doing that, the person doesn't feel like they can open up because, I mean, my problems are making you uncomfortable. So I might as well keep this to myself, increasing that secrecy aspect of it, which is not what we want. So I like that the measure is just about creating a safe space for the loved one, even if I don't have all the answers, even if I don't know exactly what to say and how to respond. It's not my job to fix them, but just to be there.
And you can say that. You can say in that moment, you just have to be, I don't have to have the answers. You can say, I really don't know what to tell you right now. I can see it's really hard.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'll help you figure this out. We can figure this out together.
Mm.
That's all.
Mm.
That's all.
Beautiful. I love that. And because also we can end up feeling like success is only once we've reached the finish line.
And
we don't see those steps that we're taking toward that finish line. Those little steps, every single step is progress. It is a win.
It is a win. Every small win makes it. It's about the journey, not the destination.
100%. Final thoughts, Yolanda.
Be kind to yourself. Remember to eat today. Food is fuel, not the enemy. And God bless.
Love it. Thank you so much, Yolanda. Let's chat again soon.
Bye.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.